and welcome to Early Days, your guide to navigating the entrepreneurial landscape. It's all brought to you by Prowse Chown. Here we explore the stories behind the ventures, the ups, the downs, lessons learned, and I can just taste this interview. This one's a goodie. Jacqueline Jacek, Jacek Chocolate, welcome.
Thank you.
We have a Simone and Ivy in St. Albert, and that's where I get my stash from.
Nice. So. Yes, it's great to have them as a partner.
Yeah, and we will get into talking because you have your brick and mortar locations, but then you also have partners, which really intrigues me. But how did you start down this road?
Right. So I took a bit of a funny road. So I wanted a business that brought people joy. So I started my first business when I was 11. So I've sort of always had that entrepreneurial side of me, and combining creativity and business is something I've always loved. So my first business was called Jack's Hats, and I would design and sew ski hats, and I would sell them on ski hills and to friends at school and all of that. And then fast forward, I don't know, 20 years, and I still had that desire to want to create and be an entrepreneur. But I had sort of gone into the corporate path, did a business degree, had a, you know, marketing sales career in the corporate world. But that fire was still in me. So I thought, okay, well, what do I want to do? And I thought, well, what are two things that bring me joy? And to me, joy is fashion and chocolate. So I thought, what if I was to become a chocolate designer? Instead of using textile for my canvas, why not use chocolate? So I presented this to my fiance, who's now my husband, of course. And he was like, yes, that sounds amazing. I'm lying. He did not say that. He's like, really?
I was going to say, wow. He's good.
He's very encouraging. But he's like, you have such a great corporate job. But he said, look, if that's in you, why don't I build you a commercial kitchen in that basement of the house? So we took one of our spare bedrooms from the basement. Him and my dad built a commercial kitchen. And I just started from there. So I'd work nights and weekends just on this little chocolate fashion hustle just to prove it wouldn't work so I could get it out of my system.
Did you have a cooking background or something, obviously?
No, I didn't. I didn't go to culinary school. I'm actually the least trained person in my production studio. And so I had done online courses, and this chocolate fashion thing had been brewing for a long time. But I was living in New Zealand at the time and did a bunch of online courses. And it kind of just went from there. So I wasn't formally trained at all.
Could you cook a roast or you actually?
Oh, yeah, okay. For sure. I could absolutely cook. And I love food, and I still love food and cooking, all the things.
You just started here zeroing in on chocolate.
Zeroing in on chocolate as my canvas. Yes.
So as your canvas. So then what's the first ingredient in chocolate?
Well, cocoa bean, of course.
There you go. Yeah. So then you must look at, okay, how do I source cocoa beans? Is that kind of the step you went through? Or?
Well, no. So there's two very distinct industries in chocolate. So I'm going to use fashion as an analogy because it's the easiest way to describe this. So you have the textile maker who's the chocolate maker, and you have the chocolatier who's the dressmaker. They'll buy the textile from the chocolate maker and rework the fabrics or the chocolate into the end product. So when I started the business, I was the chocolatier. I was the person buying chocolate from France, reworking it and creating the bonbons or the chocolate bars or the different confections. But if I was truly about joy, I really wanted to have a relationship with the farmers and really have more of a say in the supply chain. So about 8 years ago now, so I've been doing this 15 years, 8 years ago, we developed a bean to bar program, which is the chocolate making side of the business, which is the textile side. So we roast the beans in-house and make the chocolate right from scratch. So that's about 10% of what we do now is the bean to bar. And the other 90%, we work with a company out of France called Valrhona, which is one of the best chocolates in the world, as our fabric. And we rework it to create our Jacek products.
So you're sitting in your home with the commercial kitchen down below. And so now who got to be the test person?
Everyone I knew. And there was always people coming out of the woodwork willing.
So when was there the aha moment where you go, gee, I think I'm ready to go take this to market?
Well, I wasn't busy enough already working the corporate job, doing the chocolate thing. We started a family at the same time.
Of course you did.
Yeah. So I was pregnant and then I had a year's mat leave and I was going to go back to work. But at that point, I had a decision to make. It was either go back to work or stop the chocolate because I couldn't do both. The chocolate was starting to have legs, but there was no moment of like confidence that this is for sure the right thing to do. And I don't know if anyone ever experiences that. That wasn't mine. I still had this I was quite nervous about leaving comfortable employment to do this. Now, the reason I was able to do it was because I had a husband who was super supportive. He was very supportive always of the idea, but excited about the idea of me doing this. And then he was willing to work hard to pay for our life while I built the business.
And then also maybe gave you more opportunity to just stay home with your new family.
Right. Yeah. So yeah. I did stay home for a little bit, but trying to do the chocolate thing and have a baby at home too proved to be a little bit more difficult than I imagined. So about after a year, I, you know, had home a day home and treated the chocolate business like a full-time job.
Okay. So now you're starting and now you got to get it to the consumer. So
yes.
What was involved in that step?
Well, I think that's probably one of my favorite parts. There's lots of favorite parts, actually, in the chocolate making, but it's actually going out to markets and really talking about the product, explaining what's different between artisan chocolate, why it commands a much higher price than confectionery, and just really, you know, going out and being everywhere and trying to get my product everywhere, chocolate into mouths, people trying it. And I think I do question sometimes there's no way to test this, but I don't know if my business would have been any or had the successes had if it hadn't been in Edmonton. I think Edmontonians are so keen on supporting small businesses, small food businesses, that I felt really blessed along the way to just feel really supported.
You must have had to initially give away a lot of chocolate to get people talking about your product, would you?
Yeah, I think at markets we would sample a little bit, but okay. Not an enormous amount. I think it was a pretty balanced amount. Like, I didn't go out and give a bunch of free product in the hope of getting return. I've always been pretty, like, you know, I think the chocolate has a really good story and people were just keen to try it. So I think that just, I'm vouching for Edmontonians and supporting with their dollars.
So how did you know the sweet spot for the price point on a more expensive chocolate?
Well, I built the price based on my costs. It wasn't really a marketing pricing strategy. It was, here's my costs and this is what I need to charge. And it's really important that we pay more for our chocolate because the chocolate I buy is more expensive and the beans that I buy are more expensive because the supply chain is clean. Chocolate can be a pretty dirty industry. And it's surprising, actually, I don't get asked a lot as to why our chocolate's so expensive. But I think the question we should ask is, why is other chocolate so cheap? And so that's sort of a lot of the story of why our product is more expensive. It's a better quality product, but it also has a clean supply chain.
Well, and now you've built yourself in such a reputation. When someone says Jacek Chocolate, everybody goes, ooh.
Oh, thank you, Sam. I'm so surprised that people have heard of us. So, you know, I'm always, you know, somebody recognizes my last name, like, do you know the chocolate people? I'm like, oh, somebody's heard of us. Amazing.
So what was your first big sale then, your retail? Was it opening up the location? Because you have, what, the 142nd Street in Sherwood Park. Which was
yes.
the first?
Sherwood Park.
So you started in the park. So was that... How did you get to that point?
For sure. So I had the little basement studio and I had my first employee there, Corinne. She was with me for a decade. She's phenomenal. We really grew out of the basement. It was about 150 square feet. And so an old bakery had come up for lease in Sherwood Park and I was very committed to staying in Sherwood Park because I had a baby at this point that I wanted to be close to him. Even if I was at work, that if needed, I could be close to the day home or to school or whatever. And an old bakery came on the market for lease. And I thought, I'm going to go check it out. And it was pretty special. It wasn't definitely to the code or to the standard I would want to operate in. So we renovated it and got it to a point where it was good. So it was one bay out of five. And we've now taken two more bays. So we're three out of five bays.
And like,
but that transition was very like finding the right spot. It was the right price point. We put a lot of sweat equity into it, not a lot of money, but that's just kind of was the next logical step for us.
So opening day and they came in droves.
Oh, opening day. So we opened the doors and I can't remember what time it was, 10 o'clock, and there was no one. I was like, oh my gosh, what have I done? And then at about 10:20, you couldn't walk in there. So yeah, it was one of those stories of like, you know, you have these like self-sabotaging moments of like, I'm an idiot. Nobody cares. That wasn't the case. And then, yes, we for sure got super, super busy. And then about 5 years after that, we opened 104th Street downtown. And then that one closed at the beginning of the pandemic. My lease was up. And my landlord, I asked if I could have a year extension just because this pandemic was happening. And I was like, this might last a year. Thank God I didn't know how long it would actually last. It was much longer, but he wouldn't extend it for a year. It was 0 or 5. So do you know what? I was lucky. He said 0. We retreated And then we opened Crestwood just last year.
Oh my goodness. That's, you go, whew.
Yeah, things happen for a reason, and I think I need to trust that more.
When you opened the Sher Park location, that first location, so how, you know, when if people came in droves, what was your marketing like?
Just word of mouth, and I think the Sher Park News was always really kind to us. They sort of advertise it, and Sher Park's such a tight-knit community. Word of mouth, and people just, yeah, I think they just told a friend, and if, you know, 100 people tell a friend, you get 200 people, and then 400 people, and it just kind of grows that way. There was no real silver bullet in our story of like a big win. It's just been very organic and word of mouth.
Now, we talked earlier in the show about partners. So such as I talked about Simone and Ivy in St. Albert, my hometown. I know they sell your chocolate. So talk about that's where you probably were in the park going, okay, how do I expand?
Yeah. So, I mean, our idea. So one of the things I'm proudest of in the business is we give 1% of our top line revenue to community organizations. So I have a responsibility to grow because the more I grow, the more I can give back to ultimately lead to my ultimate career goal to be a philanthropic lady who lunches. And so I'm starting now through the business. So, you know, I'm always looking to spread joy and find new markets of people looking to buy gifts or treats. And so it doesn't always mean having to open my own brick and mortar, but finding people who are serving the same customers that we're serving and finding those synergies. So we have one in Canmore, which is, it looks and feels like us. It's a store within a store, but it's operated by Stillwaters, and they do such a great job at partnering and bringing joy. And Simone and Ivy was another natural fit. They'd been a wholesale client of ours for years and became a partner, which means they have access to more products just recently. So
with your philosophy, that's how you started the business was, okay, what brings me joy? And that path is continuing. That must be your guiding light for everything you do.
Absolutely. It's our Northern Star is to spread joy.
Okay.
And joy is from the farmers who are farming the cacao through to our team, through to the end customer. So it's not just customer focus, it's thread throughout our whole business.
And so now you obviously have had to build a team.
Yes.
So how did you go about doing that then? That they obviously have to have that same philosophy.
For sure. And I think, I mean, it's having a strong set of core values. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs will agree with this, is really understanding who you are. And so our mission is to spread joy. And we measure that in our give back as well. But finding people that align to our core values of joy, number one, teamwork, creativity, experience, and excellence. Those are sort of the things I look for in team members. And I've had to make the hard decision in the past of hiring for core values, teach them the skill, but letting go of people who have the skills, but not the core values. So, you know, those are sort of lessons I continue to learn, but I have to protect our core values.
So with the 1% of the product going, so what things are you believing in that you're giving back? We talked about the farmers and everything, but where is your heart lying as you distribute these monies when I see you sitting at lunch with a glass of champagne and a chocolate?
Yeah. So the 1% is given. So we get requests, we get about 7 requests a day for donations. So of course we cannot do them all. So we have a monthly budget that we'll give to sort of requests based on customer requests and that kind of thing. But I have 2 major projects a year. One of them being the Sergeant George Meok Scholarship. He was a soldier from our town in Sher Park. My husband had gone to school with him and he lost his life in service in Afghanistan. So I worked with his family to develop a collection based on who he was and his heritage. And every Remembrance Day, we sell that collection for $20, and then 100% of that goes to a scholarship to help to do different things in schools in Sher Park to really promote sort of this idea of freedom and not taking this for granted in his memory. And so that's one of the projects, and we raised $4,000 for that. The other one is in Bulembu. So I believe we are part of a global community. I don't, the 1% doesn't mean it has to all stay in Canada locally. A lot of it does. But again, we're a global community. My chocolate is sourced not from Canada, right? So again, there's a global community. And in Bulembu, they is 400 orphans in this village. And so we've supported them. Every year we do a big fundraiser from school shoes, textbooks. We've built a house, all sorts of fundraisers. We've transported goods from Canada to there that they needed, built vegetable gardens, irrigated vegetable gardens. So we've done, I believe, I can't remember, it was about 9 years worth of projects there.
Oh, my geez. So now, as I look at your 2 bricks and mortar, you've got these partners. what now do you see for the future to make sure you can keep doing these projects?
Yeah, for sure. So we also have a network of 200 retailers across the country that sell our products. So we're pretty Alberta-centric right now, but I think the future means becoming more Canada-centric. So we're very much working in Alberta to grow our brand, but doing so along some other retailers across the country. So 200 right now.
And so how do you go about doing that with the expansion? Did you just... You Google something? Or
No. So we found a distribution partner. So what they are, so they're an agency that represents lifestyle brands that are serving, you know, a higher end demographic and who really work with lifestyle boutiques across the country. So they represent us and have a great relationship with these stores. Otherwise, it might be impossible for me to call all these people, introduce myself. They would have zero trust. I mean, they have no idea who we are. So this was just the easiest way to do it. And they're such a great partner in representing us.
So all the chocolate, is it made right in Sherwood Park?
All in Sherwood Park. Yeah, and then we distribute from there.
How many employees?
So right now we have about 25 employees. So we're a lean little machine, but we are very seasonal as well. So we do about 60% of our annual revenue in 6 weeks of the year, which is at Christmas. So we will scale up our employees then, and then in lower seasons, they're seasonal staff, and then we just have our core staff.
How do you manage the cash flow?
Oh, do you know what? I've become so used to it now because at first I used to fight this cash flow. Like I always have the analogy of a bucket. We fill our bucket at Christmas and it's going to last us all year, right? But the shape of our revenue is the same every year. So I've become so used to it. And I've actually, after 15 years, I used to fight this. I used to try and create revenue in low seasons and spend so much energy. I've completely flipped it now to embrace that seasonality and, you know, have a break and let the team have a break and like, let's enjoy our lower seasons and be super hyper prepared for the busy season. Because what I'm finding, we're spending all our energy trying to make revenue in our low seasons when we could have better spent that energy focused and really, you know, executing well in the peak seasons.
Oh, it's a great, great idea. It is. Have you looked, and you 15 years, is there something you went, oh, damn, wish I'd known that?
I think it's all kind of part of the journey. Like, I don't think, I mean, the first, I think, couple of years, I think one of the things I wish I would have listened a little bit better was in accounting. I do have a business degree. I think I probably didn't pay enough attention to my accounting lessons. So there was things in bookkeeping that I had done wrong. So I had to do a year's worth of bookkeeping again because I was doing it myself. I mean, when you're a solopreneur at that point, you're doing everything. And so there's little things like that. But I learned it, right? I don't regret it. It's all part of the journey in learning.
Yeah, and because it you can't know everything.
You can't know everything. And if you did know everything, this wouldn't be any fun. I think when I stop learning is when I'm sort of done doing this. And I never want to stop learning. There's so much to know and so many mistakes to be had. So many learnings to be had, for sure.
Have you ever just wanted to, has there been a point where you go, oh, damn, I got to get out of this chocolate business?
There's definitely been some stresses where I'm like, oh, I'm not sure I'm cut out for this. Where you sort of question your strength and your ability, but we always get through it. And I've surrounded myself with incredible people, both within my team and outside of my team. So I have a lot to credit them for like keeping me going when times do get tough, and they do.
Yeah. Do you have mentors in the business that you work with? And
yeah, so I'm part of EO, which is called Entrepreneurs Organization. So it's a global network, but the Edmonton chapter is super strong of business people. So the whole premise of it is really encouraging people. It is not a networking sales organization by any stretch. In fact, I think you're kicked out if you try and sell anything. But it's more peer support and sharing experiences so we can learn from each other. So that's been a really like great sort of group mentoring type thing. And they do have a mentorship, formal mentorship program as well. So I have had mentors along the way, like their 1 year programs, which have definitely helped. And I think one of the sort of aha moments I had with one mentor, who's an incredible businessman here in Edmonton, he recognized the glass ceiling I put on myself and the little artisan chocolate business I started. And he's like, next month, I want you to come with this like enormous number of sales. And I want you to pitch the business plan to get there in 5 years. I'm like, that's impossible. Of course, it's not impossible next month. And, you know, he's a serious businessman. You're not going to show up empty-handed. So I spent that month working on that business plan, and it's totally possible. So just really pushing me to think differently.
Oh, I love that. Because you're right. We do put it on ourselves, limitations.
And limitations. Yeah. And part of it is, I think, security and safety, right? To put these limitations on ourselves. And it's okay. it's just sometimes kind of fun to see where you can go and where you can break through these.
So little 11-year-old Jacqueline, who's had a hat business. How the heck did you start a business at 11? Where do you learn that?
Well, I think I had really like encouraging parents. Like they never said, oh, that's ridiculous. Or it was always like, what do you need? So I needed a sewing machine. So they got my sewing machine, set me up in the basement and got me sewing lessons and, you know, did all the things. And I think that sort of is a credit to my parents that just nothing was ever impossible.
Jeez. But obviously for you, to start that business, and then you went into the business world, but knew it wasn't bringing you enough joy.
Right. It just wasn't my calling.
Yeah.
I loved the people I worked with. Like I loved the organization. It just wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. I'd be driving to work with my husband because we would drive downtown together. And I'd be like, I just feel like my soul is not fulfilled. Like I couldn't explain it. And he couldn't understand it either. He's like, you go to work, you work your 8 hours, you're paid well. Like what more could you want? And I'm like this niggling little thing of like, I just need to prove it won't work.
So if somebody's watching, they're an entrepreneur and they're just going to, okay, I want to go for it. What would be that one piece of advice that you'd send them out on their journey?
I would say test it first. Like I'm always very cautious of people saying, like, just follow your dream at all costs. Because I think that's not, I'm risk averse. I'm actually like, I want to test. I want to know that it's going to work or some kind of educated risk on it versus just like throwing it all to the wind. So that's what I'm comfortable with. So I think people really need to understand their tolerance for risk. I'm risk averse, so I like to test things first. And I was at a point where I had to choose the chocolate business or my job. It's not like I'm going to try this. I'm going to quit my job, see if this chocolate thing will work, and then go from there. For me, it was like I was at a point where I had to make a decision because I tested it in a mess.
How many chocolates do you eat a day?
Depends on the day, a lot. Like. People ask that and wonder that. It is true. I do eat a lot of chocolate. We taste all the time. We're always in development. And because our business is based on our fashion business model, we're constantly launching collections. We're not pumping out the same things day in, day out all the time. We're constantly in R&D and things have to be worked on and tasted.
Well, obviously, I got to wrap this up. I got to go bring the box you brought me. Thank you. Eat it all up. Thank you to JSEC Chocolates. Jacqueline, this has been awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
What a great journey.
For having me.
As you can tell by today's insightful conversation, we've left you with some valuable takeaways for your business. Thank you to Prowse Chown, our wonderful sponsor. Legal advice, support, business litigation, environmental law, they do it all. Prowse Chown. Thanks again, Jacqueline.
Thank you.
This series is proudly produced by the team at Road 55. Road 55 creates content that connects. For more information, check our website, www.road55.ca.